listening to the Radiator 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. And today, on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with a bookstore owner. Michael DeSanto, co-owner with his wife of Phoenix Books and Cafe in Essex, which is now also going to feature a new bookstore in downtown Burlington. I spoke to Michael DeSanto in the Essex location of the store, which you will hear operating at full tilt in the background of our conversation, which is a happy sound for an independent bookseller. We discussed the new store, publishing trends, and how bookstores are surviving in this new era of books. I asked him to begin by talking about his background in the business.
My wife Renee, Renee Reiner, and I both came up from Massachusetts together in 1995, and we bought the Book Rack and Children's Pages from Sandy Gorowski. Mm-hmm. And so we operated that store in Winooski and then out here in Essex for about 8 years. And we reached a point where things were going along but not growing fast enough. Mm-hmm. And I got very bored with that, so we decided to let it go. We sold it to one of our managers.
Elaine?
Yes.
Okay.
So Elaine had it for a number of years and started to struggle. We did make an effort to buy it. It didn't work. And so she chose to close Book Rack and Children's Pages, and that served to fire me up to open up Phoenix Books here in Essex. Mm-hmm. So I had a four-year hiatus where I did a number of other things and then came back in 2007. We opened this store in October of 2007.
Okay. All right. Great. And then the business in Burlington that's just opened, when did you start thinking you wanted to do that?
About a year ago, when it became apparent that Borders was going to go away, mm-hmm. We began to beat the idea around about how to take advantage, if there was a way to take advantage of this. Some other independent bookstore owners, so we weren't the first, had started to move into spaces vacated by the Borders Express, mm-hmm. which was once located at the University Mall
right.
South Burlington.
Okay.
And so because those are smaller spaces, an independent company could more likely afford to move into something like that, mm-hmm. to move into a 22,000 square foot space like the Borders space in Burlington is prohibitively expensive. Mm-hmm. To open a bookstore takes approximately $100,000, mm-hmm. per 1,000 square feet.
Okay.
So if I tell you that we have 6,000 square feet in downtown Burlington, you know what kind of capital it takes,
sure.
to establish a store of that size.
Sure, wow, okay.
And so, no secrets in the business,
no,
actually.
No, absolutely. Well, no, it sounds like it's probably a formula. So you started thinking about it a year ago. So when did you actually start making commitments and putting this into action?
And because Renee and I had a meeting in a business way to discuss the best way to go with this, we agreed, Renee and I, that she would be the lead on this.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to have to detour in this conversation,
sure.
a little bit, because one of the things that we realized almost immediately, if you'll go back to that $600,000 number, is that we didn't have available to us that much money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have,
well, who does?
X dollars tied up in this store,
yeah.
and there wasn't a pile of cash sitting around that we had access to equal that. So we had some resources, financial cash, if,
mm-hmm.
you will,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't come close to that. So that's when we decided that in addition to looking into opening this space, we would also explore raising community-supported investment to make it happen.
Right.
And we tried to copy the process they followed in Hardwick with Claire's Restaurant.
Okay, yeah.
And we, in fact, engaged the very same lawyer who structured the Claire's business arrangement to help structure our arrangement so that we could stay within the letters of the law and also have a good way to reach out to the to people to make either investments or loans to the company.
Okay. And is that the membership program, or is that separate
from
that?
That's part of it.
It's part of it.
It's okay. All connected.
All right. Well, since we're talking about that now, let's talk about the membership program and what that does for customers.
Sure. So in the first event, in order to establish the company as a viable option, we did raise hundreds of thousands of dollars from local supporters.
Okay, great.
These are our actual investors, $5, $10, $15, $20, $25,000 worth. But we also wanted to try and reach out to more people. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that was through this $1,000 program and the $100 membership program.
Okay.
So I think the best way to describe the $1,000 program is that it seems to work very well with companies and businesses mm-hmm. who want to pre-buy books. So you basically invest in our operation with $1,000 and you get a certificate good for $1,000 of books purchased at a 10% discount.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get to use it at $200 a month so that you don't just come in and like drain the store of inventory. After you do that, so it's to help the store.
So it's a max of $200 a month.
Yes.
Okay.
And the intent is to help the store get started. It's really not to offer a bargain to the community that way.
Yeah.
We feel, Renee and I have always felt this, that an independent, locally owned bookstore is always viewed and always is a community asset.
Yes.
So that's what was behind us, motivating us to do this, is that we just sat and said we live in the community of Burlington, you know, at large. I mean, the entire community encompassing many of the towns outside of Burlington. And it doesn't have a downtown bookstore.
Yeah.
And clearly we think it can sustain a downtown bookstore.
Yeah.
So all of that plays into what we were doing.
Okay.
So we think the $1,000 works for businesses, and the $100 program is effectively a 5-year membership for anybody who would like to support the bookstore. It gives us some cash up front that allows us to buy all those books that you need.
Mm-hmm.
$300,000 to put books into that store.
Right.
So, and if you get enough $100, it's actually real money, as the congressman said once upon a time.
Right.
And we're still collecting those memberships now and can still use more support that way.
So does that work the same way as the $1,000, where the customer then gets to use that $100 toward books?
It's a little different. The $100 gets you a 5-year membership, if you will, in Phoenix Books. And you get a 10% discount on all your purchases.
Okay.
It's good for both stores because both stores are under the same company umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So if you shop some in Burlington and some out here in Essex, you'll be able to use it as often as you possibly could.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of interchangeability between the two stores.
Mm-hmm.
So the membership serves that. It's a 5-year deal. A 1-year membership is $25.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of a discount for paying in advance. And the money that comes in now is being used to purchase the new books for the new store.
Okay. All right, great. The store that we're sitting in right now, the Essex location, has a cafe and wine bar and has a lot of author events, I know. Through the years, I've seen that you've had a lot of author events. And first of all, I should point out that the ambient noise that we're hearing is the bookstore as it operates behind us. But I just want to ask, are you doing a lot of author events in the Burlington store? And it looks like you chose not to put a cafe there. So I wondered, you know, if you thought about it and decided it probably wasn't a good idea or...
Yes, indeed. And we did think about it. Cafes are actually very expensive propositions. My little cappuccino machine over there runs about $5,000.
Yeah, okay.
So, and I hate to sound so money-centered, but that's really what it's about when you're opening a business. So the cost of that is challenging. But we also felt that there are an awful lot of cafes already in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
For example, our good friend Allison Lane, who owns Mirabelle's.
Oh, sure.
Is there, and there's a Dober Tea House is right next door to our Burlington store, and there's
Uncommon
just any number
around the corner.
Of
yeah.
of opportunities to buy a cup of coffee or a scone or a roll, and it just didn't seem sensible to try and compete in that. Even though people often associate bookstores and cafes now, it just didn't seem like a good fit for what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. So we let that go. As for the other aspects of a bookstore, we expect to be very aggressive in supporting author events at the new store.
Okay.
Our grand opening is coming up, starts on June 7th. So on June 7th, there's going to be a small reception in the store to honor and thank the people who've invested. But on June 8th, the mayor will be at a ribbon-cutting ceremony in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's going to be Friday. Mm-hmm. That day, we are designating Local Author Day.
Okay.
So we are inviting, literally inviting, everybody who has a book to come by with a couple copies of the book, meet our people at the store.
Uh-huh.
We use a consignment system to support the local authors because we can't really afford to buy every book that mm-hmm. comes out. So if they place three books with us, we will put them in the store on a consignment basis, and that should work for everybody. If the book sells, we'll certainly call the author up and restock it. But it's basically, if you have the book and you want it to be displayed in the Burlington store, bring it in and we'll put it out.
Okay, great.
That way. So we'll have a little form for people to fill out and sign so that we can keep track. And it's very open on that Friday for the local authors to come in and and register with our local author program.
Okay, great.
We have many authors coming in. Madeline Cunin and Senator Hinda Miller, who has her new biography coming out. She was the founder of Jogbra. Served for 10 years as a senator. Andrea Chessman has a new cookbook out, and then we just go on from there. There are authors. John Katzenbach is coming in.
Okay.
Wow. Later in June, and it'll just be continuous. I expect us to do an author event probably at least two or three a month, if not one or more every week.
Now, will there be events that are repeated between the two stores? Like you'll have one author in the Burlington store, and then that person will be here in Essex either the same day or another day?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Someone like an Archer Mayer, who's coming, his new book will come out in the fall, and I'm sure that we can get Archer to do both stores, I hope. Things like that.
Sure. Well, that would be to his benefit, I would think, too. Okay, great. Let's talk about the part of the Burlington store program where it says, bring in an Amazon box and get 25% off a book. So what's that about?
Well, that that is about my antipathy for the way the company does business.
Okay.
And not about buying things on the web or any of that sort of thing. So people are going to do that. There's no point in pretending that I could stand up and stop that from happening. Renee and I both feel the same way about this. We have engaged a company called Digilicious to help us with our marketing for opening the new store. And we batted around some ideas, and it became apparent to us that the real future competition isn't between bookstores. So Barnes & Noble is a company. They sell books out of a bricks-and-mortar space. So that's a sort of even-up competitive situation. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But the Amazon thing is a little different. So we felt that it would be okay with our opening advertising and marketing campaign to basically throw a little dig their way. It's not intended, and clearly no expectation that we're going to affect them one way or the other. But we did think that it would serve to niche us in the identity of the public as being a little on the feisty side and a little on the cutting edge of the world. So so we just wanted to throw that out there, and that was the way that we picked. The idea is, if you have been an Amazon customer, and many of us have been, then to introduce yourself to what a real bookstore is like, a bricks-and-mortar bookstore that actually hires people who live in your community and who can help you buy a book or find a book or order a book, and who put money back into the community through the fact that we are a sales tax-generating engine.
Yes.
And therefore, this money actually stays in the community to build your roads and pay for your infrastructure and put your kids through school.
Yes.
Unlike what happens when you buy a book from Amazon.com, where there is no sales tax collected through a variety of loopholes in the law, and the money goes into basically the coffers of this company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely opposite from what we do with the independent bookstore. So the idea was that if you've been doing this, maybe you'd bring us a box and it would serve to set off the light bulb about what this means. So we'd love to have people become a little bit more mindful mm-hmm. about what buying or consuming a product means. I've heard all the discussions about, well, actually it's more environmentally responsible to buy an e-book and all that sort of thing. I think that's gobbledygook, because as most people ought to know, it takes rare earths and various polluting metals to build these things, and they get thrown away and lost and stuff, so it just never washed with me.
Yeah.
Paper is probably the single most renewable product that we have in the world. I just can't see the problem with it. So that was why. We just wanted people to be more mindful about what they're doing.
Okay. All right. Great. Now, is that for both stores?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we've had anybody come into Essex with a box, but we have had a number of boxes coming in downtown in Burlington.
And it's a new program with the Burlington store opening up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder, it'll be really interesting for you to see if the boxes start to taper off at some point because people are changing their shopping habits.
Yeah, I really, honestly, Shayla, I don't expect it to make much of an impact.
Right.
It's more for piquing your curiosity
yeah.
when you read this, to get you to ask me the question.
Sure.
Well worth it.
Even if it doesn't affect Amazon.com internationally, maybe it'll affect Burlington, Vermont.
I hope so.
That would be cool. Okay, so you just mentioned e-books. Is there a way for independent booksellers to sell e-books for people to read on their e-readers, or not yet?
Yeah, you could today buy an e-book through our website
if you
wanted to.
Okay.
The real problem is that the way they're priced, and without getting into arcane industry discussion, the way that they're priced is that there is no money left over for the middleman, the bookstore, basically. So Amazon is artificially set a very low price
mm-hmm.
for an e-book,
mm-hmm.
and it's intended to collect market share. It's not intended to make them a lot of money. And you know, if your goal in life is to save dollars, then you're going to shop at Amazon.com or any other internet company. But so there is no way for us to compete on price that way. And the publishers are getting hammered by Amazon as well with this pricing policy, because Amazon has refused to pay them a reasonable price for these e-books. So the authors are getting short shrift, and the publishers are getting short shrift, and some of us see this e-book thing, the way Amazon is pricing it, as potentially creating the end of the world, if you will, for publishing as we know it.
Mm.
So what that would mean is that this whole middle world of writers who make a living by writing would probably disappear, leaving you with a much fewer number of writers controlled by Amazon.com and a vast multitude of self-published writers who will never get their books distributed in a meaningful way. So it'll always be a kind of local appeal on that end of it. I don't know if that communicates very clearly in a short couple of sentences or not. But it's kind of, from my perspective, it's kind of scary, the pricing issues that are going on
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
And folks are not able to see past their own self-interests mm-hmm. with this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think for a minute that Amazon.com is going to hurt you at a future time, then you're really missing the boat.
Yeah.
Because once they've remedied the competition situation, they are going to take you to the cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
How about the difference between, for bookstores, do you see any kind of big difference between the books that are published by major publishers and the books that are published by smaller publishers? apart from self-publishing. Is there a big difference there or not really?
No, I do not find a big difference. Some of the books published by small publishers win the prizes of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, from the poetry prizes to the National Book Awards to Pulitzer Prizes.
Right.
So I find small presses of great appeal to me.
Okay.
As a bookstore owner and the buyer of books. They are harder to move because they're not supported with marketing dollars. You won't see an advertisement in the New York Times Book Review mm-hmm. for Copper Canyon. Well, you might for them, but for some smaller press.
Yeah.
But they're out there, and I think the bookstores actually try and support them a lot. I do want to mention that to go back to what we were saying about this store or Phoenix Books selling ebooks, is that we have actually established a new website through the American Booksellers Association that does allow us to offer ebooks to our customers in a way that is more price competitive for supporting the independent bookstore as well. So you can do this, and independent bookstores who don't have their heads in the sand are well aware of ebooks and well aware that they want to be able to sell ebooks.
Okay. All right, great. Now, how about self-publishing? Let's talk a little bit about self-publishing from the perspective of a bookstore owner. Is it a good thing? Is it not a great thing? What is it?
We love books here at Phoenix Books. We don't have any predisposition against self-published books versus published by a publisher books. And in fact, many of the books that we're beginning to see, for example, Hinda Miller's book mm-hmm. has a publisher, but they're using what we call print-on-demand technology to get the book published.
Okay.
So, and that's all fine. The real issue has been that a person will pay too much money per copy for their book, and when they bring it to the bookstore, and the bookstore asks for its standard discount on the product, they get pale in the face, because if they did that, they would be actually giving us the book for less than they paid for it.
Sure.
So I understand that dismay.
Yeah.
But the way the industry is structured, for a company to stay in business,
yes,
it must earn or be able to mark up its product by, and I'm going to give you the number, about 40%.
Okay.
Most retail does what you call keystoning, which is where they double the price. So if you're a keystoner, a retailer who keystones, and you have a product that costs you $5, you sell it for $10.
Okay.
Sometimes, if you're doing that, you can actually sell it for $15. We can't do that in the book business because most of the books come with a price on the back. And so your customer looks at you pretty funny if you try to mark up the book higher than that number, which is often the case when the print-on-demand author, the author who has used a print-on-demand technology to get their book printed, but they paid $15 a copy for the paperback book, comes and says, well, in order for the bookstore to sell that book, we'd have to charge $25. Well, everybody knows that paperback books generally cost about $15.
Right.
So the public isn't going to support a $25 paperback. Maybe the author's family and friends would do that, but the general public isn't going to get in line to go and do that when they can buy other books for $13, $14, or $15.
Sure.
So the real issue for a bookstore and print-on-demand books is a pricing issue, not a content issue or a source issue. Some print-on-demand books are awesome, excellent pieces of work. Cliff Walking by Dr. Stephen Payne comes to mind, that came out last fall. And Dr. Payne came in here, and he still laughs at me because we had this lengthy discussion about how it needed to work for us to sell his book. And he saw the light, and we sold hundreds of copies of his book here because we got a price going that was competitive with other paperback books and still met his needs. So,
okay.
So that worked. So it can be done. But we do think that the authors sort of need to understand the economics of retailing,
right,
as much as the economics of getting the book printed. But, and I understand this. Boy, you've got this book, and you wrote it out, and now you want it in print, and you want to see it, and you want to give it to your family. And so they jump and do that. And then they say, oh, maybe I should get this distributed to the bookstores. That's when they find out, oops, it cost me $17.50 a copy to get it printed, and now I can't get the bookstores to take it. Those stinky bookstores.
Okay, so what happens when the bookstore has a print-on-demand business internally? So, for example, I know that you are considering whether or not to invest in a print-on-demand espresso machine, which is something that some bookstores have started doing.
The espresso machine is now controlled by Xerox.
Okay.
And to be very honest, and I am very honest, we are in negotiations with Xerox about trying to bring in a machine like that. The cost of the machine straight up is darn near as much as opening a bookstore.
Wow.
So it's like buying a printing plant, which is what it is. It's just small. So you have to have pretty deep pockets to do that, and you have to have a pretty confident estimate of how much market you're going to have, because if you don't print enough books, you won't be able to even pay for the thing, much less get a return on your investment.
Sure.
So, much like the bookstore, you have to run those numbers out and see what you can come up with. So, frankly, that's why there aren't more of them.
Yeah.
One would have thought that such a thing would have revolutionized the industry almost overnight.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. And that's because the darn thing is incredibly expensive.
And is it patented to remain within Xerox's control, or is it?
I don't understand the legalities. I just know that there is software expense involved with this thing that is patented and controlled.
I'm thinking of Betamax and VCR. And
I don't know. I haven't seen any competition coming out to the espresso machine.
Seems like that's a very expensive machine.
But it does some very expensive things.
Yeah.
And if I thought that I could get a guarantee of about 10,200-page books, I'd put one in the Burlington store tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I don't have that yet.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out a way to get to that point. So there are, the machines exist, there are many of them in some certain libraries, certain universities. I know that the bookstore in Manchester has this capacity, and I think there's someone up in St. Johnsbury that's doing it too. But basically, if you do this machine, you're going to become a publisher.
Yeah.
And that becomes a whole different business. And you know, I tried publishing. Renee and I tried publishing years ago. We have rights to the name Onion River Press.
Okay.
We published some poetry books the old-fashioned way. We published Philip Baruth's book, Dream of the White Village.
Okay.
And Daniel Lusk's book. We published a group of six Vermont poets that Daniel Lusk edited. So we tried it. We would run off 1,500 copies. And I can, again, it's not rocket science. In the day, and that was about 12 or 13 years ago, you would print off 1,500 copies of a book at about $6 a copy.
Through a local printing
press. Through a printer, yes.
Yeah.
And you would have a good old-fashioned printed book. And it would look, I think, better than the typical print-on-demand book looks. And in a couple of our cases, the art of the cover was so nice that I would have put it up against any publisher's trade paperback book. But then you've got to find a way to sell 1,500 copies of that book.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you've got like, well, where are the sales reps? How do I get this out? It's not just not going to do it typically out of one or two bookstores. You need a network of a couple of hundred bookstores, at least in New England, to sell this book. Well, are they really interested in Rhode Island in six Vermont poets? You know, and if so, why? So then it becomes this marketing labor of convincing people to stock it, and then you've got to convince the people to buy it, and that's another.
Right.
So it's very challenging.
Right. And you've already got a full-time job plus a cafe.
That's right. So you can do all these things, and it's all possible, and most of them are guaranteed to lose money.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
But we're thinking about it.
Good. Great. All right, one question I do have is, how do you go about booking author events? Is that something that the author always comes to you first, or every once in a while are you seeking out authors who you've heard are publishing and you'd like to sponsor their event?
It's a combination.
It is, okay.
So when we took Book Rack and Children's Pages years ago, author events were often paid for fully by publishers. So we would get calls. Would you like to have so-and-so? Would you like to have so-and-so? And we of course, immediately got entrees into the local Vermont authors, the Chris Bajalians, the Howard Mosiers, the Joe Citros. We had some famous people like Richard Russo come to the old store. But those kinds of tours began to become less common. Fewer authors were offered them, and they didn't do as many events. Mm-hmm. And so it's changed. Now we really do focus here in Essex on the local ties of an author. Mm-hmm. So we still do Howard Frank Mosier. We still love Chris Bojalian. We still look for Archer Mayer and many other local authors that you would just go to the website and see how many we do.
Sure.
That we would love to have in the store. And we've done a number of events with the self-published local authors too, like Dr. Payne. And others, and they've been successful as well.
Okay.
And so we'll do that. What we're finding already with the Burlington store, and here I will talk about scale for a minute. The Burlington store is twice as big as this Essex store. So that's not a little bit bigger. That's a whole lot bigger. Mm-hmm. So we have gone to our publishers and said, by the way, we're opening up a 5,000 square foot store. Can we triple our credit limit? Because we're selling maybe $5,000 a year of your books in Essex. We're going to do $10,000 at least in the new store. So I need some space. And so we've had to do this all the way up through 30 or 40 publishers. So what that does then, it says, tweaks everybody at Random House, tweaks everybody at HarperCollins. They say, whoa. These guys are players now. And I don't mean that. I'm not really breaking my arm to pat myself in the back. It's just a fact of life.
Sure.
You know, so in Vermont, we become a big bookstore just overnight, just sort of by accident. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to see the people from the publisher saying, oh, by the way, I have author A who would like to come to Vermont. Would you guys be willing to take him? So this is putting us back on the map, if you will.
Sure.
And I'm thrilled about that, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled. Great. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
Now, once we become really successful with the events, then we'll get more. And so my hope, Renee's hope, is that sometime in the future, we are a major stop for big-time authors to come to the store here.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the deal.
Okay. Who are a few of your favorite authors?
My favorites?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have marketing favorites, and I have personal favorites. My personal favorites, which I will respond to the question with, are really old and hoary authors, people that led the way years ago.
And so, they're dead now, and they don't need you anymore.
Many of them are.
Okay.
So I'm a big science fiction guy. I like history books, and I love science books.
Okay.
So that's what I do.
Okay.
Author-wise, you know, I like Howard Frank Mosier.
Yeah.
I think he's the best of both worlds. He spins a good yarn, and he writes well.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be high on my list.
Yeah. And he's a very nice guy.
And he's a wonderful guy.
Yeah. Have you ever written? Have you ever been a writer?
Oh, stop! Where did you get that information from?
I didn't. I just thought it was a possible natural extension of
the Yes, well,
books.
The definition of a writer is somebody who sits down and writes a lot.
Right.
So I cannot say that I ever did that.
Okay.
But I have fooled around with poetry.
All right.
In college, later in life, and of late. And I still have been known to sit down and write the occasional haiku about a blooming peony.
Okay, great. how about some book recommendations for what's out there right now for people who are looking to find a new book for summer reading? Or
I have to say that 50 Shades of Grey, 50 Shades Darker, and 50 Shades Free has been flying off of these bookshelves here. I mean, we've sold 150, 200 copies of this thing already. So as a sort of recommendation, I'm going to go with the public. So this book has really hit somebody's quote hot unquote button, if you will.
Sure.
And so people are reading it. And I've talked to some other media people about this book, and I think it's great. I don't care whether it's great literature or whether it's whatever you want to call it. I think as a society, it's great that we can have a book like this be number one on the bestseller list, and the walls of the world are not crashing down around our shoulders. Say, look, see, that's why we have freedom of the press. That's why we have freedom of ideas here in the United States. And to me, this is just like the symptom of why we are a great place.
Okay.
So, yeah, plus, I've read it, and it's kind of interesting.
All right, great. How about another book recommendation?
One that you feel comfortable putting on?
I'm totally putting that on the air.
What am I reading right now? See, I'm going back and rereading J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just reread The Hobbit.
What general advice do you have for unpublished authors looking to be published and published authors looking to be recognized in the market? Which I suppose is two questions, but...
Published authors?
Looking to be recognized in the market. So people who are either self-publishing or they've got a publisher, but suddenly they're finding that they don't have marketing support, so they want more of a presence in the market.
Well, I would recommend that these folks take a look at my favorite Vermont authors, Chris Bajalian, Archer Mayer, and Howard Frank Mosher, and mirror what they've done. Howard still goes to hundreds of independent bookstores.
Mm.
Every year for his books, when they go from hardback, he still got the old-fashioned system of publishing. They publish a hardback, and then about a year later, they publish his paperback. So that's sort of the standard way that it used to be done.
Yeah.
In point of fact, they're actually lessening the timeline from hardback to paperback. We're starting to see a lot of books spending only 9 months in hardback or even 6 months now in hardback. So that's just an interesting trend.
Yeah.
But so you look at Howard for the hard work. I mean, he just works hard at marketing his book and getting out to bookstores and traveling from one end of the country to the other.
Yeah.
Archer Mayer has written 20-odd Joe Gunther novels. And he used to do that, but then he went high tech. He's really savvy into his website, and he spent some time when his publisher began to allow his old books to go out of print. He obtained the rights to his work again, and then through a very small publisher, he got his own rights, became his own publisher, AM, for Archer Mayer Press, and uses Enfield Distribution to get the books printed and distributed. And he then now becomes his own sales rep, working with bookstores to carry the book. Chris Bajalian, on the other hand, is the serendipitous or lightning in a bottle going back. And we had Book Rack and Children's Pages when it happened. He was picked to be an Oprah book in the middle 90s. And his success after that,
phenomenal,
goes on.
Yeah.
But one must never forget that Chris put in all the hard work at the front end. Mm-hmm. His book that was selected was not his first book. And he had been laboring in the fields diligently for years. And he still, for example, continues to write his column for the Burlington Free Press every week.
Yeah.
And so, frankly, when you examine those three, you see that it's hard work, diligence, and then maybe some luck.
Yeah. I also think in Chris's case, it's technological savvy, because he is an amazing user of social media. He is very good at that stuff. He's always tweeting and website is up to date and his blog and all. I don't know how he's
I'm not.
For
I don't know anything about tweets. I really don't. My technology stopped at the websites and things. The tweeting phenomena has completely missed me. And Facebook and that sort of thing, I'm aware of it, but I'm not active in it. So you've got me. Some of them are using that, I've no doubt.
Is anybody in your store? Do you have?
Yeah, we do Facebook.
You have
it's
a
not
Facebook
like
page.
I. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do Facebook and we do tweets and all that sort of thing. I just don't know how it works.
Okay.
But that's why I have smart people working for me in the store.
Great. All right. Well, that's it. So thank you very much for speaking with me. I really enjoyed it.
It's my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Michael DeSanto. You can read more about the Phoenix Bookstores, their cafe, membership programs, news, and upcoming author events on their website, phoenixbooks.biz. Now that it actually feels like summer, today's Write the Book prompt is to write about a first swimming experience, either yours, someone else's, or that of a fictional character. Good luck with this prompt, and please listen next week for another. Write the Book has a Facebook page. If you're a Facebook user, please go on Write the Book Radio Show and like us. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. I say this every week. If you have comments about the show, news about book-related events, if you have a writing prompt to suggest, or if you'd like to suggest a possible guest for the show, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. Please remember that this station is here thanks to community support and involvement. The Radiator is an all-volunteer station, and more information about its work is available online at theradiator.org. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, in Burlington, Vermont.